Your Humanities Half Hour is brought to you by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council, Navigating the Human Experience Together.
Hafade, Thiro, and welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry, and today we are continuing our series on stories, legends, and folk tales, giving us a glimpse into many of the different cultures that make up our Marianas community. And today I'm excited to be learning about the country of Peru with my friend, Millie Saiki. Millie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Man, it's interesting because you've lived here 30 years, given so much to the community, and I'm really grateful that we're able to share a little bit about your country and your way of life today. So thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Most people, when they think of Peru, right, they think of Machu Picchu. But maybe you could start us off with something about the Incas or...
Sure. Peru... Everybody knows the country because Machu Picchu has become an amazing place to visit. But Peru is much more than Machu Picchu. And we study about the Incas at a young age, but how much we really know about the Inca culture and how has been affected through the changes of life. So I was thinking to share with you the legend of how the Inca Empire was founded. So, I don't know, you think it will be good?
Yes, please.
Well, the Inti god, which is the sun, wants to help the earth to become a more beautiful place. So, it sent his children, which was Manco Capac and Mama Ocllo. Manco Capac was going to be the prince and Mama Ocllo the princess. So, when they came here, they came from the Titicaca Lake, which it is one of the few freshwater lakes in the world.
I think I've heard of it.
They said it's more than 300 million years of, it's very old.
Yeah.
And right now it's very interesting, and we will talk about later why the Titicaca is important, but the legend says that Manco Capac and Mama Ocllo came out from the Titicaca Lake. And the father, the son, gave them this little stick of gold and told Manco Capac that he has to put the stick on the soil until the stick went all the way in.
Okay.
And that means that's when the empire, it will be founded. So that's what they did. And the legend said that they walked for many, many days until they arrived to Cusco, where it is the Inca city, and that's when they found the Inca Empire, and that's when everything starts.
When you hear this story, do you relate to it in any way, like the gold or the lake being significant?
Well, a lot of festivities are around the Inti, which is the gold sun, and Peru has a lot of gold and silver, so in a way, yes. And the Titicaca Lake has a floating islands that they are made by a grass called ichu. And the natives put layers of this grass year after year, and that's where they live. And they don't, in the past, they didn't leave the Titicaca Lake. They stay there, they fish, so they eat fish, and they didn't have power. They didn't have
internet.
And once a week on Fridays, they will go to the city and exchange the fish for whatever other food they wanted. But now we have solar panels, so now they have sun. They have power, and it has become very touristic. So they have even small rooms that tourists can rent. But the majority of the traditions are staying there. Now they send the children to the city for education, but a lot of them will return to the floating islands to live and get married. So it's very interesting. It's one of the most touristic attraction because it's totally different.
Yeah. About how many people are living on these floating islands?
Last time we went, there were, I think, 27 islands, and they are different communities, and they are like a tribes. Every family has his own island. And I believe between 27 and 30, I believe.
Do you see, well, one of the things you do living here is you take a group of young people from the school where you work to Peru on a trip, which is great that they get to go with you being from there. Do you see any parallels between, or do they see parallels between life and culture in Peru and their lives here in the Marianas, you think?
So many times they said, oh, this is like over here, especially the name of the food. We have buñuelos, they are different, but the name is igual and same. We have estofado, some of the dessert may be similar. And the influence of Spanish in our culture is there, definitely is there.
To what extent is Spanish culture a part of Peruvian culture, and is there still a strong Native American presence?
In the Peruvian Andes, the cultures are still very strong. And there is the Quechuas and the Aymaras, they even speak a different language. And they are very proud of being natives. And unfortunately, as in a different cultures, they are discriminated because they don't speak Spanish properly. They don't look Spanish or mestizos. They are a little darker in skin, and the factions are much more pronounced. And when I talk to my tourist guide, when I go and bring my students, most of the time they'll complain because sometimes they will bring employees from the capital instead hire them because they don't look as white as other cultures. But they are very rich in cultures, and I really like when I talk to them because they are maintaining the traditions. And I'm very proud of those traditions. And I always tease my family, and I said, I think in my other life, I might have been from here because I just smell the food that they cook with wood or stones, and I just want to dance.
So looking back to when you were a little girl, is there a particular story that stands out to you, like this is a very popular children's story or your favorite children's story, anything like that?
You know, like we have the All Saints festivity here that when we have similar. We don't go to the cemetery, but November 1st, it is it's holiday, it's a big celebration. So on October 31st, before Halloween becomes so important around the world too, families or companies will get together and then we'll have a cake in the shape of a baby.
Wow, okay.
But not with legs and arms, it's more like this.
Okay.
And the company will name the godfather, the godmother, the parents, and the baby has a symbolic meaning. Like I used to do it with my students here, and we will choose that the symbolic meaning of the baby will be the future. So each one of them have to wish the baby something for the future. And then you have a glass of champagne, and the godfather has to throw money. And the money is for real money, coins.
Who gets the money?
The guest.
Okay.
Most of the time will be only the children. So children will wait for the godfather to finish the champagne, cut the baby, and then throw the money, which is called cebo. And the kids will start, cebo, padrino. And all the kids are running for the money. And you can go to the bakery and they will have a small, it's called guagua, the baby. In Quechua word, it means baby.
Okay.
So they will have the guaguas and it's like a sweet bread. Like a sweet bread you can buy here, the chamorro bread.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what it is. But it has like a little face of a baby.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, something fun.
That must have been like one of the favorite holidays of the kids, right? Was this holiday. What's it called again?
We will call the Bautizo de la Guagua. Yeah, the christening of the baby.
Oh, okay, baptism yes. of the baby.
The baptism of the baby,
okay.
Yes.
So we were chatting before the show, and you were saying that there's actually a lot of stories related to different holidays, mm-hmm. either religious or otherwise. Could you give us another example?
Yeah, when the Spanish came to Peru, and actually to South America, they wanted to impose the faith, the religion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to South America, you are going to see there is a lot of churches. Like in my city, which is Arequipa, we have 7 churches downtown. We are telling you about 12 blocks of construction, and we have 7 churches. And usually these churches were built under, there was Inca Palace, they will destroy it, and they build the church on the top to impose the religion. And obviously when the Spanish people came, at the beginning, they didn't mix with the Peruvian natives. But little by little, it happens, you mm-hmm. know? So there is a lot of mestizos, and they start converting into the Catholic faith. But then the celebrations start also mixing. And a great example is the Corpus Christi is one of the biggest Catholic holidays, and is celebrated in Cusco. And I think it's 51 days after Eastern, I believe. And so they have 4 virgins, Virgin Marys, that they have different names.
Yes. Yeah, I think they have
that
here too.
You have, yeah.
The Merciful or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. And you have Santa Maria, Santa Ana.
Yeah.
And then you have also the saint, like a San Agustin, San Antonio. So they choose, I believe there are 7 saints and 4 virgins, and they get out from every church because they have different churches, and they are going to walk from the church all the way to the cathedral.
Okay.
That takes eight days. Every night is one procession. So the bishop will be there, some personalities will be there around the Virgin going into the cathedral. Or
question.
The
so is this like a statue?
The statue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the
okay.
statue. But behind the statue, you will see a lot of people
from that
with
church.
Music.
Oh.
Dancing and drinking. So you see the faith in the front and the diversion and the fun in the back. So it's when I say the folklore mixed with the faith. And
okay.
It's just fantastic.
No? Okay.
And it lasts for 8 days, and after that, the city is absolutely tired because all these festivities and dancing, and it comes with a lot of food, a lot of drinks, but it's really amazing. When I go with my students, we are lucky enough to see the last day.
Yeah.
I don't bring them there because it's a little busy, and I always a little worried, you know, safety. But last time we went in 2023, we saw the last part with a lot of dance. We even danced with them a little.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, there is celebrating the Inti Raymi, that is the beginning of the solstice of winter. And in Sacsayhuamán, which is the biggest ruin, one of the biggest ruins in Cusco from the Inca times, people come from all over the Andes to make the celebration, and is to pay tribute to the sun, the god sun. And they sacrifice a llama, and again, it's a lot of dancing and celebration. But you see, one is with the faith and the Catholicism, and the other one is just with the Inca traditions.
Mm.
But are in the same, kind of the same day.
Is there conflict between people who are more into the Catholic / Spanish faith and or more into the
together? It's just different ways to celebrate.
Okay.
Holy Week you have the very serious traditions with going to church, receive the communion, having a procession, but it's a lot of food also involved. And a couple of days before or after, like now is Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, is the beginning of the carnival in South America, when you are going to hear the biggest Rio de Janeiro carnival. Mm-hmm. In my city is a huge celebration too.
Okay.
And one of the biggest celebrations comes in the highest part of the Andes, where more than, I don't know, maybe 5,000 people will come from all over the place to just dance for La Virgen de la Candelaria, another virgin, mm-hmm. that comes from the Spanish time, and is the day of the Candelaria Virgin, and people will just dance with these traditional dances and customs and different food and drinks, and it's really impressive. But even though it's maintaining the culture of being an Inca or Quechua, it is around the festivities that they were brought by the Spanish people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Well, it kind of sounds like Peru might be a good place to go and like celebrate anything.
Yes, it doesn't matter when you go.
Are there
it's going to be a lot of holidays? Oh, yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah, if you go, these months are the summer, and it's amazing, you know, because we have more than 200 miles of beach. So
wow.
You can choose wherever you go, and it's great. But if you go during the winter, there's always one celebration that you will be like, wow, this is great. And as was telling you before, the Peruvian food has become something very famous and popular, so it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. We're chatting today with Milly Saiki of Peru, telling stories, and we'll be back with more after this break.
Hafaday, Zantiro. I'm Leo Pangilinan with the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. We'd like to take a moment to thank our generous sponsors who have made possible the many programs in our community like this show. We couldn't have done it without them. And if you value the work we do and would like to make a contribution to our efforts, we ask that you consider making an in-kind or cash contribution to the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. Any amount is appreciated, and donations of up to $5,000 qualify for an educational tax credit. We appreciate your partnership and support. Sizus Maasi, Olomai, and thank you.
Welcome back to Your Humanities Half Hour. We are continuing our series, Stories, Legends, and Folk Tales, talking with Milly Saiki from Peru. Milly, we were talking about one of my favorite subjects, food, right before we went to the break. You mentioned earlier the wawa, the cake shaped like a baby. Do you have any other stories related to food?
Yes. Peru has a big influence from people from Macau.
How is that?
When the slaves got freedom, people in Peru who has these big farms lost the workers. And so Peru has a lot of sugar cane and cotton. And somebody has the great idea to go to Macau and bring workers. And they told them, you know, Peru is very rich in gold. Peruvians don't know the value of gold. You will become very rich soon, which it wasn't actually. Peruvians knew the value of gold.
Yes.
But there were a lot of people from Macau to go to Peru and stay in the coast.
Okay.
So they influenced the Peruvian food. And if you go to Peru, you are going to find a lot of restaurants which are called chifa.
Chifa.
Chifa, which means just Chinese food. And that has fusion with the Peruvian food, and now we have a dish that is called lomo saltado, which is very, very popular, and it's just meat with onions and tomatoes.
What kind of meat?
It has to be a tender meat.
Okay.
And when I invite people to my house here for dinner, it's something that everybody loves it, asks me how I made it, and it's a very simple dish, but It's very popular. And I'm a good cook, too.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I might have to test you on that.
Yeah, I think, I will write it down. So you can see a lot of dishes that are coming for the influence of the Chinese community. But also, Peru has the second largest Japanese community.
That's right. There are a lot of people
in Peru. The first one
Peru
is in Brazil. The second
names.
One came to Peru during and after the war, too. Actually, my husband's father was Japanese.
I see.
So, and that has brought a lot of fusion food with one of those are the ceviche. And the ceviche in Peru, it's a little different than in other cultures because Peruvian, we have a very special lemon, which is very, very citric. And that's what makes the Peruvian ceviche very, very peculiar and special. Mm. And it's the raw fish that is cooked in the lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And has become also very famous. And from that, a lot of Japanese chef has started mixing, and you know, from whatever you see as sashimi, now it's called tiradito, but they have a lot of different spices that we use. And so each one of them has become very, very different, and it have this unique flavor. And of course, we have the traditional food with quinoa that a couple years ago became very popular around the world, which Peruvians, we weren't very happy because we were buying it for, I don't know, maybe $2 per pound, and then suddenly went to $18 per pound.
Whoa.
Because quinoa got very popular.
Yes, that's
and
true.
Everything was exporting. Mm. But
it's very nutritious, quinoa.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we have three very strong mark places in Peru, the coast, the Andes, and the jungle with mm-hmm. the Amazon. So. Mm-hmm. Foods are different for whatever region you are going, but each one of them has a very special dish or place and has become very famous around the world.
Something to look for when we travel off island, Peruvian food.
Absolutely. I think Peruvian has become, if it's not the first, it's the second or third destination just for food.
Mm.
And last year, the Peruvian restaurant in Lima was elected the best restaurant in the world.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember the name, and that's bad. But yeah, it was, everybody was so proud of it that forget if you want to go to that restaurant. I think reservations are all the way to the 2025.
Wow.
Because it has become very famous. Yes. Yeah.
Well, one of the other very well-known things about Peru, other than the new fad of the cuisine or culinary aspect, is this little fellow here that you brought.
Yes.
The llama. I have to ask you first, though, when you handed him to me or when I picked him up, you said not to keep,
yes,
just to for the show.
Yes.
Is he special to you?
Well, it is special because despite of what people think, we have these animals come from the family of the camels. But it's not only one kind, we have four. And so the one that has become very popular, the llamas, which in English is llamas, and the llamas are used more for transportation. And then the cousin is the alpaca, which the head of this animal is the alpaca, and you can see
this
it's
is
very
the,
soft.
This is an alpaca. Oh, so this is actual real alpaca here?
Oh yeah, this is a real alpaca. Yes.
I didn't realize, but now that you mention it, it does feel different from a normal stuffed
animal. Yeah, it is a real alpaca, and they have alpaca and baby alpaca. This is alpaca. Baby alpaca, obviously, is much expensive. And then llamas and alpacas can be domesticated. You can have it
okay.
in your garden or in the farms. But we have another ones that are called vicuña, and vicuña are wild. And they are just in the Andes. They are free. And I will tell you something very interesting about them. And there is another one that is called guanaco that is, I think, in extinction right now. I think they are only 50.
Wow.
Because the conditions of the weather have changed. And so when
Do they use the hair of those? What's the last one called?
Guanaco. No, they're very, very wild.
Because they're so endangered. Yeah.
And the vicuña is very special because you can shave them only once a year. And the produce become very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
and it's light, but if you wrap yourself in something from vicuña, you are protected from the coldness. It's amazing. Mm. Yes. And when the Spanish people came to South America, they brought dogs, they brought horses, and then people who were taking care of the alpacas and the vicuñas, they were afraid of they were going to start killing them. So they took it high in the mountains, in the Andes. The wow. conditions are really, really difficult. Number one, you are over, I don't know, almost to 7,000 meters, that's like 18,000 feet. There is no water, there is no power. Practically nothing grows there. So, but these farmers have been protecting these animals, and they still are. And so the companies who now process the alpaca fiber, they also protect a lot of the natives that take care of these animals, because the conditions where they live are very, very hard.
Extreme.
Of course, now power is a little more affordable with the solars, but food and water is still very challenging. So that's why this, which we call Aucanidos, are very proud for people in South America.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have any particular legends or things that you learn about the alpaca or the llama?
I wouldn't say a legend, but you know that they are friendly animals, but if they don't like you, they spit on you.
I think I've heard that.
Yeah, and they can also kick at you, and so people respect them. They are very cute, but they don't like to be bothered.
No? Oh, yeah, this sounds like a camel, actually, also, right? Camels can get a little bit mean if they don't like you.
And when you, I take my students to an alpaca farm where they can see there are like a six or different kinds of alpaca, ones with short hair, another one with long hair. And the amazing thing is when they shave the head of the animal, the native families comes, the women come with the children, they sit on the floor and they start touching the head and they start separating it. So you don't see much difference when you see them, if you observe them for 10 minutes, but then they will explain to you, this is a first quality, this is a second quality, this is no good.
They're experts.
Experts.
From the touch.
Everything is by hand, and they pass this from mother to daughters for generation. So the companies really protect the families because they don't want this tradition to disappear, because, you know, the modern world, kids want to go to study, they don't want to live up in the Andes anymore, they want to go to the cities, but somehow they still protecting this tradition, and they do everything by hand until it's washed and then it goes to the machines to create the tops.
No. Mm. Yeah. That's so touching because it makes me think of the indigenous cultures here and how the knowledge is passed in a very similar way, generation to generation, working together. That's how it's passed on.
Yes.
So beautiful.
Yes.
Millie, thank you so much for sharing today. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Well, if any family from Saipan is thinking to go to South America and visit Peru, please don't hesitate to call me. I will be more than happy to be your tour, or maybe give you some guidance and where to go, when to go, and very excited.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
The best days to go to eat, do some of that religious partying.
If you want to see the religion party, you go in June. If you want to dance a lot and drink a lot, you go now during the summer.
Thank you, Millie.
You're welcome. It has been a pleasure. All right.
Our guest today has been Millie Saiki of our Marianas community, sharing about Peru in this series, Stories, Legends, and Folktales. This has been your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry.
Your Humanities Half Hour has been made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Democracy demands wisdom. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more information or to share your thoughts, contact the Northern Marianas Humanities Council at nmhcouncil.org or on social media at 670 Humanities, that's 670 Humanities.